Hello everyone and welcome to our final season 1 episode of Saffron Spice with Isha and Shivani. My name is Isha and with me is Shivani. Hi Shivani, how are you?
Hi Isha, I'm good, thank you. So it's our final episode, right? Gee.
Yes.
We've come a long way. From our very first, IPL episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well done. And how are you, by the way?
I'm doing great, Shivani, and I'm really looking forward to this final episode for this season. So Shivani, tell me, what are we talking about today?
Okay, so at Indian family get-togethers, you can't throw a stone without hitting someone with a master's degree, doctors, lawyers, engineers, professors. Every family member is highly educated and professionally successful. And many even have this lucrative side gig to boot. Parents, grandparents, always sharing stories of whose kid just won an academic honor, achieved an athletic title, or even performed in the school play. Aunties, uncles, cousins, always celebrating one another's job promotions or the new nonprofit one of them just started. For us Indians, this level of achievement is normal. And for the purpose of today's episode, we'll be looking at Americans of Indian origin. So it's just what we all do, I guess.
Yes, Shivani. Today, roughly more than 68% of Indian-born Americans hold a graduate degree, with their children receiving similar and even higher level of education. These are among the wealthiest and the most highly educated immigrants in the country. Also, Shivani, Indians are entering the medical field in the US at an increasing rate, as well as a growing number of Indian Americans are becoming entrepreneurs and CEOs, building tech companies in the US, all while confidently emerging as one of America's most successful immigrant communities.
Wow, Isha, I mean, yeah, you're definitely right. And not only are we dominating all these industries, did you know, actually motel industry being one of them, did you know 40% of motels in the States, that's America, are owned by Indians?
Oh, I would have actually even thought that this is a higher, a bigger number, Shivani.
Yep.
Because every sort of motel you go to, that it's going to have, there's going to be an Indian owner to it. At least that's what I assumed. And not just Indian, it's going to be a Gujarati Patel owner.
Yep. Is it like the, because in Australia, it's like every 7-Eleven is pretty much owned by an Indian. Is it like that over there? Like if you're crossing a motel, you know you're going to see an Indian owner inside?
Yes, it is. It is very much like that. I mean, nowadays you don't see sort of Indian staff there anymore.
Yep.
But it is mostly, if it's like a motel, it's mostly going to have an Indian owner. And, every time sort of my husband and I are parking our car, we always talk about if there's going to be like a Gujarati kaka in there waiting to greet us and stuff. And we're mostly right. We're almost always right about that.
So these are like, this is what, a family that came to the US in the 40s or 50s? One family?
Not really one family, Shivani. So Patels, Patels come from a certain part of Gujarat. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a farming community from what I've heard and from the stories that I've been told, that they used to be predominantly a farming community. Mm-hmm. And they, some of them slowly started migrating to the US. Now, these people did not come with that much of a high level of education. They could barely speak the language. They had really a different way of life, Shivani. For them, of course, they didn't have that many skills to add to the job market, but they had their Gujarati genetics, I guess, and they were master businessmen. So motel industry was not that booming at that point, and that's where they sort of saw a little bit of a possibility, a little bit of an opening. Mm-hmm. Motels were also not something that a lot of immigrants were touching, because they were usually in the extreme outskirts or in rural areas of the country. Motels were predominantly made for sort of truck drivers and stuff. it would have been very out of the comfort zone for an immigrant to, you know, not be with his immigrant communities, not have access to sort of city life. Mm-hmm. But these Patels sort of went right in, and it slowly sort of one motel grew to 10 motels, and they sort of called their friends and they called their families.
Yes. I think as you were going to say, it sort of became a family owned business, right? Where you had all your relatives jointly working in the business, you know, taking up roles as you know, working behind the kitchen perhaps, or the front desk, the lobby desk. So you had each family member playing a pivotal role, right, in I guess the operation of the business.
Absolutely. You rightly said that, Shivani. And not only that, even like family business again, right? Extended family started coming in, and then Patel would usually help another Patel family to acquire another motel. So they would sort of have these joint business ventures. Yep. And this is how the network slowly grew. And today we have associations of Patel motel owners, and it's sort of become such a tightly knit society.
Yeah.
Of business people. And it's phenomenal. It's the true American dream that they've achieved, you know, from literally starting from scratch.
Yep.
Having no way to make it in a country, in a foreign country, till today these people are sitting on millions and sometimes even billions of dollars.
Yeah,
a true American dream.
It's very impressive. I mean, yeah, like you say, Aisha, they've obviously really had this dependence on the family network, and to accomplish something like this, I mean, some of the sacrifices, I guess, they would have had to have made, you know, coming from a very little English or low fluency in English, perhaps even low funds, and then to eventually see, you know, these Patels flourish in an industry like this, is it really does renew your faith in the American dream. I mean, it's hard to sort of be cynical when you see people coming from India, you know, with a farming background and basically excel. It's just amazing. It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Coming from a farming background, coming in a country where they don't know anyone, they're dealing with isolation, they're dealing with racism, they're dealing with just a completely new culture all by themselves.
Yep.
They just sort of have a little bit of their network, which is, again, it's like dispersed throughout the country, and connecting with them and their sort of building that strong foundation, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. What kind of, puzzles me is this idea that all entrepreneurs are sort of risk takers. It is kind of a myth, because I mean, these people amongst most Indians aren't necessarily sort of risk takers, right? If you look at the sort of the decision model, decision-making model that us Indians, you know, take in simply making, you know, buying something, or, you know, electing a school that our kids will attend, you know, we make very informed decisions. And to think of these people, you know, the struggles and sacrifices, seeing sort of beyond their stories. Yeah, I mean, would you not agree? If anything, they've taken a very big risk in their lives.
I would totally agree, Shivani. They have definitely taken a big risk in their life. And again, this is because, you know, what did they have? What did they have to lose? You know, we hear like Indians always say, no job is a bad job, you know.
Yeah.
Hard work brings you money. And these are the things that we've grown up hearing from our relatives, from our uncles and aunties around the family. Because this is what they believed in. They literally landed here, and for like an Indian, for someone back in India, it would be like, oh, this person like went to America and became an NRI. But this person would have started by changing sort of the sheets in a motel, or, you know, cleaning a motel and cooking food or whatever. Starting from the bare, bare basic jobs, going, you know, climbing his way up. it was a risk. It was a risk with everything. But I guess there was nothing to lose, and there was a lot to prove. So that's where it came from, yep. I think.
And then that just sort of, that motivation just triggers, and the success, I guess, triggers a domino effect, right? And then you've got other families Absolutely. Coming and then following pretty much suit to other families, right? Pretty much
absolutely
duplicating
big
that
stories
success.
Of inspiration.
Yeah, definitely
big inspiration.
So speaking of inspiration, Isha, I mean, we've also seen Indians, you know, dominating in other areas, you know, in the popular sort of imagination. India is perhaps not best known for its exports of curry, yoga, Bollywood villains. But another product is becoming a winner too. And I think that's chief executives of major multinational companies, including, you know, several based in United States. Your thoughts?
At this point, Indians are definitely ruling the C-suite, as we call it. And, you know, everywhere we go, even if I land at the airport, at the immigration center, the immigration officer is just going to look at me as a brown person and gonna ask me, so are you a developer? That's what I mean, we're known as. The running joke is that the two most widely spoken languages in Silicon Valley are Hindi and Telugu. See every, I think every second or third person would be a Desi person. So we are totally dominating, not just the C-suite, Shivani. I think Indians are ruling the whole tech industry in Silicon Valley. Yeah. Shivani, what do you think?
Yeah, most definitely. And this probably sort of ties into one of our earlier episodes that we did, which was titled Doctor, Engineer, Lawyer. I mean, it's no secret that parents in India or even outside of India urge their kids, you know, to excel in maths and science. And, you know, the belief is that this is the clearest path up the social ladder. But education, you know, is probably one of the primary, I guess, reasons why Indian immigrants are reaching to the top executive ranks in some of these major corporations, you know. Along with Indian immigrants leading companies like, you know, there's Adobe, there's MasterCard, Google, PepsiCo. I mean, it's endless, the list of companies. But, you know, what do you think some of the traits which are valued, which make these Indians so successful in what they do in some of these big companies, Isha?
Shivani, I think as you rightly pointed out, first it begins with the education that Indians come in with. We do go in for some of the best degrees that are out there. Also, I think the approach to education, you touched on it lightly in in the last topic that we were discussing. There's always a plan. So our education is also planned in a way where we can sort of, you know, move on to the most in demand skills in the job market. Yeah. So we plan our, I think most of the Indians plan their education around the skills that are required in the job market. And I think at the end of it, it's just our attitude as Indians, the work ethic that we offer. There's a slight desperation also of making sure that we continue holding that job. There's a desperation of that lifestyle which the job offers. There's a desperation to the dependency on the dollar that the job brings in. And both that desperation, our aptitude, and I guess our desire to stay in the States, stay in the Silicon Valley, all of these make the Indian worker offer skills to the job that very few other people coming from different nationalities can offer. So it's, I think, a combination of these things, Shivani.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, a very strong educational base, I guess, coupled with technical skills, right? And you know, these statistics
really do suggest that Indians have thrived in America. I think, you know, according to one a report that I was reading, Indians make up less than 1% of the country's population, but yet, you know, are estimated to have founded, I think it was 1 in 8 Silicon Valley startups. So that's just, I mean, that's just an amazing stat.
Absolutely. And I think, Shivani, I would like, I mean, we have to give it to the Indians. We've assimilated with the culture in a phenomenal manner, be it the language, be it just accepting a new culture. We've blended in so well. And I think, of course, just the English speaking ability
that we bring to the table. Yeah, mm-hmm. We're coming, you know, we're some of the Indians obviously learn English in school and we're quite fluent in it as well. And like you said, Isha, yeah, that's one of the primary reasons, I guess, as to why we're able to assimilate well into sort of global-oriented businesses, right, where English is the primary language. So
absolutely. And we discussed it in our doctors, lawyers, engineers episode. There's always a competition. There's always this push to just continue doing better and to prove it to others and to yourself. So I think these all things, which are a core of being Indian, are kind of translating to a monetary, I guess, success. I don't know how psychologically, how happy we are, but monetarily, I guess that's where our success comes from.
Yeah. And I think some of the values that, you know, that are inculcated to within us as Indian kids growing up, and respect being sort of one of them, you know, treating people with respect sort of comes very naturally to Indians. And I think this really balances well with the Silicon Valley sort of ethos, which may be one of the reasons as to why we tend to sort of do well and succeed in this particular field. But all in all, look, increasingly, I think, you know, globally, Indians are finding themselves on perhaps both sides of the debate, right? Defying both the stereotype and the convention. I mean, their voices are having an even greater say in, you know, resolving some of the big questions of our time. So, yeah, it's definitely something to be proud of. So.
Very well said, Shivani. So we talked about... Of course, we talked about the business industries and the motel industries. We talked about Silicon Valley. What are the other industries, Shivani, that you think Indians are dominating in the US or in the West altogether?
Well, one industry that sort of comes to mind, well, is in the forefront of my mind, is probably the medical industry, and not only globally but predominantly in the US. I think. Doctors of Indian origin sort of considered almost a brand, right? And they've considerably risen in their ranks, you know, in the medical community in the States. I mean, Isha, you spent some time in the States. I mean, was it visibly clear to you that there were a lot of Indian doctors compared to other sort of ethnic minorities?
Very much so, Shivani, very much so. I mean, every time I've been to a doctor, I think 80 or 90% of the doctors I've met or I've seen were brown people. They were either immediate Indian origin doctors, or they were children of people of Indian origin. So we definitely do dominate the medical industry as well. And again, I think that's again, that comes from the emphasis on education and emphasis on education, emphasis on STEM education, STEM-related degrees. So I guess the only thing Indian parents approve of, and that's what we've most of us have done, and that's where we are right now. So definitely they do dominate the medical industry. And I guess because some of the best surgeons in the country are Indians, that's where even the little bit of blame or the little bit of the controversy about brain drain comes from. Because I mean, they say that some of the best of our people are in the US, be it doctors or tech workers. What do you think?
So I guess, Isha, you know, the question now is, I guess, can businesses in India sort of retain the country's top, you know, engineers, scientists, math graduates, who are sort of seeking alternatives by moving to the US or Australia or Canada, you know, all these other countries. You know, can they offer them perhaps an attractive reward, or will we really see a shift in the outflows with these professionals migrating and boosting the economies of other countries? I mean, Canada, even China.
That's a very good point, Shivani. But, you know, see, if we go to look at it just from a financial or a standard of life perspective, India can never offer that. And that's a fact. It will never offer, it will never be able to offer the kind of money, the kind of money or the kind of sort of a lifestyle that a person of an Indian origin can get in these countries, in these developed countries. Having said that, it does, the onus does lie in the hand of these people who have made a certain amount of success or who have sort of defined industries in the West. If at some point, you know, they could go back and they could contribute to their country, or they could go back and start these type of practices back home, you know.
True. And there's often this I mean, I'm not sure if it's the case now, but I remember perhaps, you know, back in the day when there was an influx of sort of migration in Australia of you know, people of the Indian diaspora, there tends to be this with Indians from India, they tend to hold this resentment, right, towards, you know, their fellow Indians. Like, if you've sort of abandoned India and you've migrated elsewhere, is there this sense of resentment that you've, you know, you're not contributing towards your motherland? And yeah,
I think that guilt, that sense of guilt, is there. You know, I think all of us at some point always feel that, you know, we need to be giving more, or there's always a sense of guilt, I guess, for not being in India. And mm-hmm. It's also two sides. There's a lot of Indians also who sort of move abroad and they start behaving like from the day they land in a Western
oh
country. They start behaving like, oh, India was like the worst thing that ever happened to me. And they have like such bad things.
We all
to say
know
about
someone
India.
Like so, that, right?
Right. So there's, I think, there's two extremes. There's two extremes that exist for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it does. I mean, I as an Indian-born person, I do believe that the onus lies in our hands to balance it out. I mean, if we have gained something out of our opportunities that we've received in our life abroad, we do need to find a way to give back in a certain way.
Yep. Yep.
It may or may not be monetary, and I'm not saying that India needs us in any way. India has enough of its resources on its own.
Yeah.
But for our sake, I think there are these skill sets and this level of success that needs to find a way to, I guess, contribute to your homeland and a way to...
Well, we're kind of seeing somewhat of a reverse brain drain these days, right? And it actually reminds me, I actually know someone that, you know, like many other Indians who sort of head off to the US to get a degree or find a job and, you know, pursue the American dream. She was in her, I think, her mid-20s or so, and she went to the States and was fortunate enough to do a master's degree from Stanford. This is back, like, in 2010 or something like that. Ended up landing, like, a pretty good job in Silicon Valley and had a startup as well. But then obviously struggled sort of with the constraints of the US visa system. And, you know, eventually she actually sort of gave it up and moved back to India. And I feel like we're seeing this trend of late, right, where a lot of people are sort of moving back to India because of these constraints.
Absolutely. I mean, there's thousands of such people, Shivani, as you rightly pointed out. Of course, it begins with visa constraints, but it's also a lot of us sort of who are getting really great education in the US. We're sort of looking at India as, we're looking at India as a great place to be, not just from the jobs point of view, but as a market. You know, India it's an economy of scale. It's a booming economy. It is a startup heaven right now. So a lot of people are looking at India just as a place of opportunity right now. So whether it's because of visa constraints or it's because of a desire to go back to the culture, to the homeland, or to the great economy. A lot of people are definitely, we were seeing more and more number of people now moving back to India.
Yeah, as well as I think, having learned everything in the States or wherever you've been, sort of gives you a great advantage as well, right? Going back home.
It does, Shivani. It also makes me curious about, is it just United States specific? Because I would sort of think that this is the same throughout, I think, North America. But how is it in Australia, Shivani?
So compared to Indians in the US, the UK, Canada for that matter, I mean, we are yet to probably achieve or see similar levels of influence in various industries here in Australia. However, you know, we do make a significant contribution to the Australian society and economy. In fact, we're the second highest tax-paying sort of migrant community behind the Brits. So, you know, we're making significant contributions there. We're often, you know, we have a reputation of being highly qualified professionals, a high caliber of students who I believe will really sort of help drive the future economic growth of Australia. In fact, we're even the fourth largest sort of fastest growing migrant community in Australia. So really, you know, give us another few years and I think we'll sort of be dominating various industries such as what we're doing, you know, in the States. So we'll be producing similar results, you know.
That's great, Shivani. Domination is, I think domination is going to happen for sure. In fact, there's a study that says that in the coming years, just based out of the size of our population, one in every six humans on this planet is going to be an Indian person. So I think at this point, the West should start sort of looking out for us, keeping an eye on the Indian demographics. Having said that, Shivani, just to wrap this episode up today, what are the things that you think the world can learn from Indians, Shivani?
So some of the things that they can, I guess, the West can learn from us Indians?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think going to your point earlier, that sense of community, such as, you know, in the example that we gave with the Patels and the motel industry, I think, you know, finding strength from our communities, I think, you know, that's really proven to be quite successful in everything that we do. So, you know, that neighbourhood uncle and auntie often do come in hand, right? A source of strength in tough times. And obviously our multiculturalism, you know, that unity and diversity, you know, we have so many dialects we speak, so many dialects, there's different faiths that us Indians follow. So, you know, that obviously says something. And probably, you know, a big one is our deep philosophy and spirituality, right? And that goes, our rich sort of philosophical heritage definitely is something the world could sort of learn from and benefit from. And not to forget, you know, we tend to have a don't waste approach and a very frugal living approach. You know, we always find an alternative use for nearly everything in our lives, right? Whether it's plastic bottles to old clothes, the less you waste, the lesser you need in life. So I think that has really, you know, these are some of the fundamental values that have really helped Indians sort of succeed in life and, you know, get them to where they are.
So. You couldn't have said that better, Shivani. I mean, of course, just our values, just sort of our, you know, core of who we are, the hardworking attitude that all of us come with, our determination, our desperation to succeed. Indians have a certain desperation to succeed, and I think that's key. That's been key to our success, and. I guess a lot of Indians, just the fact that we had to start up from scratch, build, you know, we have stories of people coming to the West with $2 in their pocket, with $5 in their pocket, and now like they're sitting on millions and billions of dollars. And there's this sort of desire, this fire to push yourself. And that's something that a lot of these immigrant success stories are built up of. I guess a lot to watch out for over there. And I think that's a perfect way to round up today's episode, Shivani.
Yeah, most definitely. And hopefully, you know, in times to come, in years to come, we'll see, you know, us the Indian diaspora sort of contributing to innovation, entrepreneurship, competition, economic growth and job creation, right?
So hope you enjoyed today's episode, guys. Thanks for joining us in our final conversation of season one. And we hope you join us again in a few weeks' time for season two of Saffron Spice with Isha and Shivani. We hope you enjoyed us. And thanks for sticking with us through season one. We really appreciate it.
And guys, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcasting app. Or you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And please don't forget to leave us a good review on iTunes. Stay tuned for our next season. Till then, goodbye.
Bye.